This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, a special edition of H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, to comment on breaking news from Ukraine conflict. Fog of war, trailing 6 hours in the clock, and hundreds and thousands of decisions. However, we have headlines that the professor has agreed to speak to, having prepared us with his analysis of what the Russians needed to defend. We now, in Donbass, we now get this news from the New York Times. Fresh from seizing Izium, Ukraine appears to push toward more Russian-held territory. Dateline Kyiv, Ukraine, in these last hours. A day after routing Russian forces in a lightning advance that seized hundreds of square miles and a strategic town in the northeast, Ukraine claimed additional territory on Sunday, these hours, in an offensive that has swiftly reshaped the battlefield in the nearly 200-day-old war and left Moscow reeling. Ukraine's rapid gains in the Kharkiv region have significantly weakened Russia's hold on eastern Ukraine, which it has used as a stronghold to wage its war since February. Ukrainian officials said on Saturday, one day hence, that their troops had retaken the city of Izium, a strategically important railway hub southeast of Kharkiv that Russian forces seized in the spring after a bloody weeks-long battle. Professor, some 24 hours before this moment, you advised to pay attention to Izium as a railhead. What is your analysis now of the Russian front and the Ukrainian advance? Good evening to you.
Good evening, sir. First, this is quite an astonishing success by the Ukrainians. It's caught everybody by surprise, including, I think, the Ukrainians themselves, but above all, the Russians. It is a strategic victory. It's not a complete victory, but it is a very important strategic victory. And what I've been looking at today, people are saying, well, people will study this in histories of war for time to come. Essentially, what the Ukrainians have done is to isolate the Russian armies from almost all means of resupply. To understand that, we have to understand first that Ukraine is south of Russia. The only place where it isn't is on the eastern border, where Ukraine, where on the other side of the Ukrainian border, there is a rather narrow piece of Russian territory heading south, which is not well developed. It doesn't have thick infrastructure. It was never designed for war. So if you're going to supply armies in Russia, you have to always move. You have always to move from north to south. And the key railhead, as I mentioned yesterday, is Belgorod in Russia. And then there is a line through Kupinskaya, which has been taken, that used to go to Bakhmut, which was the way that Donetsk and Luhansk are supplied. Izium is another railhead connected to also connected to Russia, which was another way of supplying this Donetsk and Luhansk region. What the Ukrainians have now done is cut off both of these rail lines, and there really are not any other rail lines at all, not to mention rail lines that are sort of, if you've ever seen Russian rail lines, major lines, very wide gauge, much bigger than anything you see in Europe or the United States, carrying hundreds of, you know, heavy, heavy cars with lots of equipment. The only remaining means of supply, remember that Crimea is now south of all of, effectively, of all of Ukraine. Crimea can be reached through the cities of Mariupol and Kherson, both of which were connected by rail lines, which have now been cut completely by the Ukrainians, and is also connected by the Kerch Bridge, which is 12 miles long and connects Perekop Peninsula of Crimea to the Taman Peninsula in Russia. Crimea depends for food, water, all supplies on the Russian cities just to the north, particularly Mariupol and Kherson. So what the Russians face is having their armies concentrated in the southeast of Ukraine, and as Kharkiv, which is the closest serious connection to a major Russian rail line, as Kharkiv fell, you would expect the Russians would move north to secure. They've got to have the rail connections in the north, otherwise they can't expand south again. But instead, what they're doing is falling back to the southeast into a pocket which is of strategic significance, in that if they don't control it, and the Ukrainians do, then their whole campaign plan is ruined. But which pocket has the disadvantage that it's very, very difficult to supply? They may be able to improvise some new kind of rail connection to the part of Russia that lies to the east, near Rostov on Don and so forth, and south of that. But that area is not rich in infrastructure. There was never any reason to build major railroads there in the time of the Soviet Union, and there aren't any major railroads there. And that leaves only the bridge, and I think the bridge is menaced. So what we're seeing is the Russians being driven back, clearly against their will, in a almost panicked way from lines they had long held, the Izium line particularly, and placed in a position which is strategically difficult to extricate your forces from.
What does this mean for the Ukrainians? Given that you say this is an opportunistic advance, is this a significant moment for the Ukrainians to change tactics, to seek negotiation, to seek a ceasefire, to bring in outside forces? Or what is the alternative? Because at this moment, there's no report that the Ukrainians have a large enough force to follow through on the possible encirclement. So how do you see the Ukrainians taking advantage of this episode?
Well, the first thing the Ukrainians have to do is to fully secure the land that they have taken. And the British intelligence reports are saying that some of it is very lightly garrisoned. They weren't expecting to move major forces this far to the southeast. So they do have to be sure that they hold on to what they have. Having said that, they have now a kind of momentum, as I mentioned yesterday, what Clausewitz calls the culminating point of victory. They have reached a point where they're over the hill and the Russians are quite literally on the run. That said, the Ukrainians do not have sufficient supplies and weapons to administer the coup de grace, and this is the time to administer the coup de grace.
Yes, just a moment, Professor. That, in support of your observation, there was some 24 hours before the report that the Ukrainians had outrun their artillery range, meaning that they do not now have the protection they enjoyed in the first part of the advance.
Well, this is a problem, and what I hope is that NATO and Ukraine's allies will realize that, as Mr. Rasmussen, whom I quoted yesterday, suggests, now is the time to give the Ukrainians everything they need to wrap this up, which they can do. The Russians are on their back feet, or they're on their backs They're abandoning armor. They're fleeing. They're surrendering. We're still looking at a very small part of it's the strategic part, but we're still looking at a relatively small part of Ukraine. My worry is that because this war is not ending, it could end now. It could end in the next few weeks if NATO went to help Ukraine administer the fatal blow. But this is not what Washington has envisioned. We have envisioned a negotiated settlement, all kinds of elaborate international stuff. And I don't think that the people in our administration are really familiar with the idea of the Joe Lewis knockout punch, one punch in the 1936 Berlin Olympics. We will probably, or I don't probably, but we must avoid losing our nerve now. If the Ukrainians are lacking equipment, let's be sure they have it, because this, a success by the Ukrainians, the greater the success by the Ukrainians now, the more likely it is that this war is going to end and that the horrendous risks of escalation are going to be avoided.
Professor H.A. Mackinder, International Relations, commenting on the moving story from the battlefield, fog of war, but I read what we have from the New York Times report, and it echoes reports from other media across the landscape. Again, Ukraine is 6 hours ahead, and also we're much, much farther back from the front line, so it is very difficult to determine the status of either forces. However, we're going to turn to a possibility that has been mentioned in the Russian media, translated into English, that Putin needs to take the gloves off. This is an opinion by Russian nationalists, Russian military supporters. Take the gloves off. When we come back, what does that mean? This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.